Hey, welcome again to Let's Get to Talking. Today's a first-time experiment. I went to talk with Jesse Schroeder, and I knew it'd be easy, and I didn't prepare any questions ahead. I also knew it would probably be their supper time, he, his wife, and two little kids. And I thought, well, let's just sit down and talk and eat. So I passed on the food. I'd already had supper. And as you'll see, Jesse didn't get much eating in. He was too busy talking. And the little kids were awfully well behaved, but they put out a little bit of noise too. So anyway, we'll see how it goes. I first met Jesse at a home church I went to one winter in Moberly. There were about 20, 30 people to get together every Sunday afternoon, evening, early evening. And it was a good time. I met a lot of folk, and it was kind of interesting. They would have communion every week, but their communion was everybody brought a dish to pass, and they fellowshipped around the meal and called that communion. Good Bible study discussion, and they were almost all students at the Moberly Christian College, Central Christian College of the Bible. That's where I first met Jesse. Jesse looked a little foreign, and later I found out that his dad had played professional basketball in Barcelona, Spain, and that's where he met Jesse's mom. And she came back as his wife to the United States, became an interpreter at hospitals, and he was a basketball coach in Kirksville and around other colleges. Jesse's tall, plays basketball too, never for a college team or anything. He had somewhat dark features, a little bit of Moor in his background, I suppose, his mother's background in Spain. Jesse fell into a similar pattern of all the young men at Central Christian College of the Bible, in that if you came to the school unmarried, before the 2 years were up, you were married. So I always referred to it not as the Bible College, but the Bridal College. And something wasn't right with that marriage. I never met his ex-wife, so I don't know what was going on. I always felt like Jesse was a real prince, but she had a baby. They had a baby together. And she up and left and went back to Indiana. What impressed me about Jesse was that here he was finishing college, working nearly a full-time job so that he could pay child support. And every other weekend he would make the trip over to Elkhart, Indiana to spend time with his daughter, who wasn't even a toddler yet. She was just a baby. That was the thing to do, but not many young men would have done that, and it always really impressed me. From time to time, Jesse helped me build fence. He helped me put up a hay barn, witnessed me falling off a 10-foot ladder, and my hand was dangling, and I said, I think it'll be all right, and he said, no, I don't think it's all right. You broke your arm. So Jesse and I go back quite a ways. He worked in Illinois for quite a while. I lost touch with him, and then he moved back here to Moberly to work with a friend of his in rehabbing houses and apartment management. So, yeah, let's get to talking to Jesse and his family around the dinner table.
Nine pieces, and they come out the back and build.
Oh, they do? But we'll see that later.
So I'm looking at getting rid of about 40 nice oak, and I did have one guy come out and look at them, and I was guessing between 20 and 30,000, mm-hmm. And that's kind of a figure he was playing with real quick looking at
to
it.
You. Yeah.
And then I went, my best buddy is my son John, lives right next door, so I go up say,
Noah.
Now what have you learned about logging and what's going on in that world? And he said, I don't know anything, but I did have a Forester come out, and he's going to take 10% of whatever, but he has access to a lot of loggers, and he can come up with some, probably the best bid.
Yeah.
And I'm playing with that idea. And then John said, and do you realize that they are going to take capital gains tax on your logs? And
it didn't for me.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder if that's something that happens when you get a forester involved, because that'd be 20%, and then you
like
give
it.
The logger 50%, and this guy wants 10%. I think maybe I should just
let these
logs rot.
Yeah, cut them down yourself. That's right. That's what Arvin Nixon told me. He goes, you could cut them yourself. And I was like, yeah, the time.
Your wife didn't want you doing that.
Yeah, it worked for us because
grace time, people. I'll shut up for a minute, or do you not do that?
Actually, yeah, no, we will. You don't mind?
Sure.
Noah, hold Sam's hand.
We're about to start supper here.
Lord, thank you for the day you've given us, and the weather, and just how you meet our needs so perfectly, right when we need them. God, we thank you for. Just a surprise visit from Sam. It's always a blessing to see him. Just ask you to bless our time together and you bless his travels, Lord. We thank you for the food that's in front of us. It's in Jesus' name we pray.
Amen. Amen.
Did you eat anything?
No, I'm good. Thank you. I ate a little before I left and there's more on the way.
Okay.
The problem is, though, I'm going to get him talking and he's not going to have any time to eat.
Oh, I'll eat. I actually don't eat that much anymore. I don't eat breakfast. I barely have anything for lunch. I just eat at supper time. I feel great that way.
Yeah. I can tell you're not putting on weight.
Well, that's good, I guess.
Yeah.
Putting on some hair, I guess.
Right.
Not weight. For our logging, Tony came out. I had one guy come out and look at it from Centralia, and he shot me a price, but I can't remember. There was something weird about the situation. But Tony came out with his son, like 14 or 13 or whatever. They walked the land. We walked out in the north and then down through the south. And he told me between 13 and 15, give or take. I told him I wanted it cut pretty hard. Because he likes to get people on a 5 or 10 year plan. And I said, well, I'd rather just cut it hard and then come back in 20 years. But he told me between 13 and 15. And we ended up getting just a pinch over 19,000.
Yeah, I remember saying you were amazed.
Yeah, so it was really good. And they take 50% of the white oak. They take the 50%
right.
of that. Of the
I thought they took 40 and
no, it was 50% of the white oak, and then on the pallet wood, just your
right.
black oak and hickory, it was 40 to us, 60 to
right.
them, and on walnut, it would have been 40 to them and 60% to us.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have any walnut worth cutting down. So.
Right, I hear that's kind of a standard.
That's
way
pretty much how it goes. We had a couple of trees that were almost 4 feet across on the stump, but
no, they didn't pay you a head.
Tony,
you and I have some things in common. We were both milkmen. You were delivering milk over in Illinois.
Yep, for 5 years, yep.
And then I'm told you took a pay cut to come over here.
I did, yeah.
No
yep.
regrets. Now you're probably getting paid more now than you
yeah,
were.
Yeah, it's come full circle.
Right.
We take care of our own, you know, healthcare stuff or whatever, but it's come full circle, and I'm in charge of my own schedule even more than I was before. I was in charge of my schedule a lot when I was a milkman, but I'm even more so that now. And Ivan and I are best friends. We've known each other for 12 years, been through a lot
of. And what are you doing?
We're managing rental property now.
Okay.
So we were doing construction, and we still do some of that, but we've kind of wound that down. We kind of decided we want to pick which business we're going to focus on, and we decided that it's called HomeWise Properties. That was the one that we really should focus on. And so he handles, kind of a lot of the visionary type stuff. And I handle more of the operations type stuff. And so there's about 380 units that we manage.
380?
I think a little over 100 of those are storage units. So those aren't very complicated
sure.
to manage.
Right.
And then the rest of them are all single family or multifamily and commercial units.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all in Moberly. I think we have one in Huntsville, and we have one apartment building in Mexico that we deal with. And so, yeah, we just got back from Dallas.
So if you buy more units now or places, it's stuff that doesn't need a lot of work.
Most of it does need work, actually. Oh, okay. So, but we use subcontractors for it, or Ivan and I do the work ourselves.
Gotcha.
Yep. Yeah. Because we're in the process of buying some properties, and they all need work. Some need a full gut. Some just need a little bit of this and that. But we've got a pretty good network of just local subcontractors. Some of the guys who were working for us actually were able to get started at their own little side business, and so we're keeping them going. And
yeah.
And then we'll jump in and do what we can ourselves.
So the other, where you were buying properties big time and rehabbing them yourselves instead of subcontracting, was working, but it was probably killing you off.
Yeah, pretty much. Rachel could attest to that. We bought one ourselves a little over a year ago, and I did the work I'm doing now. I was the project manager for all the construction stuff, and then still did some property management stuff. And then at the same time, we have our place here to manage, and then I was remodeling our rental by myself, and that gets old.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's better doing it. Ivan and I are buying some property together, and just looking for opportunities to we work very well together. It's hard to get a good dynamic going in the world sometimes when there's not a good solid trust there. And so with us having gone to Bible college together and been through all kinds of things together, it makes it a lot easier. But we're we feel like we've learned about 8 or 10 years of lessons in 2 years of doing business.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Because you've been working with Ivan just 2 years now?
This would be my second full year.
Wow.
Yeah. So we've done a lot. We've accomplished a lot. Like I said, we just got back from Dallas. A month ago we went to Dallas to do a software training on our software we use for managing all the rental property.
Huh.
And that was very beneficial. It's just me, Ivan, and we have one full-time maintenance guy, and then we have another girl who's kind of doing some stuff part-time that just started up. So we'll see what happens there. But
Moberly is an interesting little city, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And when I say that, I think of West End Street. Do you know that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's on our do not buy list.
Right, right.
We don't buy things over there.
A heck of a lot of Moberly houses are really in need of help. But they're being lived in.
They're being lived in.
Are they? What percentage do you think are owned and what percentage are being rented? Any guess?
I have no idea of the houses in Moberly, but I would be willing to say that, I don't know, maybe 60 to 70% of them are rented out. I mean,
interesting.
I'm just totally
sure. I know, but I would have guessed the same thing.
But yeah, I think so, because most of the houses that are owned, you know, for sure, are the newer developments.
Sure, exactly.
And there's
the ones that don't need work.
Yeah, I mean, me or Ivan will have part ownership in most of the properties probably that we manage, but we manage several properties for other people. We don't own them or anything. They just they come to us to manage them. And we've scoped out a lot of different properties to buy and whatnot over the past couple of years. So we've been in a lot of the properties too, and we know a lot of the other rental property owners in town.
Right.
The ones even we don't manage their property, but we have good relationships with them. And you'd be amazed how many of them are owned by somebody not living there.
Sure.
And West End, that whole area is, you know, kind of a rougher area. But there's, you know, on pretty much every rough street in Moberly, there's at least one or two houses that have been revamped. And there's somebody built a couple duplexes, I think, right over there on West End.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And they're like brand new. And so, I mean, I think people are trying to slowly but surely make. We have a couple houses on some streets in town that are, you know, they don't have the best reputations, but we kind of figure, you know, one house at a time, kind of turn around a neighborhood, you know.
Yeah. I had, maybe I mentioned that I had two friends that were blind, and they owned a house on West End.
Really?
And it was falling into the ground, but they still made it habitable. In fact, the one fella rewired
the whole
house.
Really?
Yes.
He's blind and he rewired it?
I said, how'd you do that?
Trial and error?
I wore really thick gloves. Rubber gloves.
No kidding. Ma'am.
And I said, what about the city inspectors? And he said, they kind of just breeze by houses on this street.
Yeah, they have actually gotten they've gotten a little more strict in the past couple of years. I think in 2021 the International Building Code was updated. And so they've actually been trying to bring a lot of houses up to speed, which presents some challenges, but the end goal of it is good. We've had some situations where we need them to kind of be patient with us because you can't take a 120-year-old house and make it just like a brand new one overnight. You know?
So you found good experience working with the cities?
Yeah. I mean, there's always times where, you know, they'll throw a curveball at us or something and we got to try to figure out what to do with it. But we haven't ran into anything we haven't been able to get resolved, and they've been reasonable with us whenever we ask them to, you know, work with us, and their motives for trying to get the houses safer and stuff are all good.
Yeah,
you know?
So. We'll take a couple slurps and I'll tell you another story about West End.
Did those guys live in that house, or did they?
Oh yeah,
rent
they lived
in it.
Sure, and they had jacks holding the ceilings up.
Yep.
You know,
that's pretty common.
And you had to be pretty careful where you stepped because you're apt to go through the floor. But another story about it, there was this old geezer contacted me and wanted me to deliver milk to him.
Mm.
And I don't know if he was a hoarder or just the people before him were hoarders.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there was just stacks of stuff everywhere in that house.
Can hardly move
around. I had to weave my way through and stick the milk in his refrigerator, holding my nose all this time because it was also full of cats.
Oh, man.
And for a couple weeks, I took milk there, and there was still a gallon of milk in the refrigerator.
Wow.
Well, I kept, you know, taking that old milk out, putting it in, and then I show up, and the house is burned to the ground. And I asked a neighbor, what's going on? And I don't remember the old coot's name. He was probably in his 90s.
Yeah.
They said, oh, he died a couple weeks ago. And they found him in his chair in the living room. And they moved him out. And I don't know who torched it, but it was torched.
That happens. There was a house that burned down.
So I was delivering milk to a guy who was dead in a chair in his living room, and I didn't even know it.
We found, just a couple months ago, we found in an apartment complex we took over management for, I walked in there to meet the pest control guys one morning about 6:30, and they said, you want some kittens? I said, you're kidding me. It was a vacant unit, and there was five, what do you think, dear, like year and a half, or week and a half old?
3 week old.
3 week old kittens. Oh, yeah. In the base cabinets of a kitchen.
Wow, yeah.
And so we took them out, and now we have them out here. The kids took them. But the other, one of the coolest things we found was an old telegraph machine.
Huh.
And it was a house that was built, I think, in 1890 on Morley Street. And we remodeled the inside. The previous owners had done the outside. We gutted and redid the inside. And one of the guys found in an old attic. There's staircases that have been removed from.
Mm-hmm.
You find old stairwells in these houses, and it's
sure.
Like, how do you hide that? But they found up in an attic an old telegraph machine, and there's a bunch of slips of paper that said like the railroad telegraphers on them or something like that. So they must have had some kind of deal going with the railroad. But it's one of those old houses that has, you know, the real 2x4 oak studs in it and stuff. We gave it to one of our...
Probably some square nails, too.
Yeah. We gave it to one of our HVAC contractors, his wife. He goes, my wife likes old things. I was like, well, maybe that's why she likes you so much.
Oh, my. Well, we all know what a cat house is.
Mm-hmm.
I have a new definition for a cat house.
Oh, yeah?
A cat house is where when you step out of your car... You can smell the cats in the house before you get any closer.
Yeah, we've ran into a few of those. Yeah. Yeah. I had one of the tenants the other day. I was at a business in town where he works, and he happened to tell me, he goes, yeah, you know, the mice are not a problem out there where we live at all. I'm like, well, yeah, it's because there's a million cats out there. And because some people feed them and stuff and sure. make them their pets. Then he said, our main problem is the cats. They crawl underneath the trailers and stuff. And,
yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Well, I'm excited to hear about the changes that have happened.
Yeah.
In
yeah.
your business. That's great. And you get there by doing.
By doing, learning the hard way. It yeah. helps. That helps having two of us work on it. And
yeah.
we've had, you know, it's been kind of neat because even we had a lot of people that have worked for us, and then they've moved on for one reason or another, and then we made a decision to kind of
right.
transition to another business. But even the folks, the few guys that we had to let go, ended on great terms
good.
And keep calling us to, you know, do other stuff for us. And
mm-hmm.
and so when you can kind of get in the mix with business and all the things that come with that and still have, you know, really good relationships on the other side. Really
well, cool. talking to you, maybe there is hope for the housing in Moberly.
We'll see. They're building new houses like crazy. They're building a lot of spec houses in town. I know several of the contractors doing that. And they're doing duplexes and stuff.
Okay.
There's people building those. I just talked to another guy today who's wanting to build some duplexes. Mm-hmm. So the need is known, and there's plenty of people
yeah.
trying to meet the need. And but
right.
you know, the financial world affects that some. You know, the banking world kind of went crazy in the last few months, and so everybody's trying to figure out how to adjust to that.
Mm-hmm. The cost of materials is going down significantly.
Yep, yep. Yeah.
I wonder why. That's
I
amazing.
Know. I don't know.
You know, I remember buying some OSB boards
mm-hmm.
At the beginning of the COVID thing
mm-hmm.
for over $20 a sheet,
mm-hmm.
and the last ones I bought were $11.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Weird.
I'm okay with it.
Sure. That kind of can make up for the increased interest rates
right.
almost.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely helping because there for a while there was some of that, some of those sheet goods
mm-hmm.
and stuff were even $30+
right.
a sheet. And
so tell me what you've been doing here. You moved
well,
in a couple years ago.
A couple years ago, we bought this place. This mobile home was not livable, and I hauled milk a couple hours away in Quincy, Illinois during the day, and then any days I had off, I would drive over here and work till I couldn't move anymore, and I slept out in the front room of our shop for, you know, when I had overnights and stuff, and got this place decently livable.
With
yeah.
the snakes and spiders.
With the snakes and spiders.
Huh.
Yeah, there was snakes up in the ceiling tiles and
mm-hmm.
brown places everywhere. But and whenever...
By the looks of things, you put a new ceiling in.
No, we just painted it. We painted the
okay.
ceiling. We took the cabinets out and did new cabinets and put in a countertop. The whole kitchen layout is new.
Okay.
And everything else just got painted. A lot of holes in the flooring got fixed. Redid some bathroom things and redid all the plumbing. Some of the electrical, added a kitchen window.
So you had a solid trailer basically.
Yeah,
to start
it was solid.
With.
The main structural thing that was getting to be a problem was some of the subfloor was if you stepped on it you'd fall through it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I redid some of the mechanical stuff. Our furnace still worked. This trailer's almost 40 years old.
Mm.
And it's the original furnace and it's still working fine. But we actually use
electric.
It's gas, it's propane, yeah. But we actually use our wood stove out in this little extra
sure.
room. I redid that room. The ceiling in that room is actually the roof that was on that room.
Huh.
But yeah, we got that done. And got the logging done, put in a garden, cut down a bunch of trees ourselves before the loggers got here. And,
what are the critters that you've got on the farm now?
Right now we're down to just chickens and then a bunch of cats and a dog. Five cats. Yeah.
The horse is gone?
We
I gave her to a friend of mine.
Okay, that's good. That's a happy story.
Yeah.
She's
it
got kids
that'll
use her. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard the story of that horse?
No.
She was like a miracle.
Okay, tell it to me.
Her mom,
this is Rachel. No.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah
okay.
Yep.
Rachel is going to tell a story about her horse.
Okay, so my horse's mom.
Wendy.
was my mom's horse. My mom passed away when I was 11. So that horse was special to me. And she was infertile, from what we could tell. We tried to breed her to a donkey several times. And she was given to my mom because she was infertile.
Hmm.
I guess the people who owned her bred horses, and she wouldn't take. So.
And Rachel grew up off the grid, so she rode horses like kids like me rode bikes when she was a kid.
Well, when I was 19, I lived with a friend of mine. We rented a house together over near Brookfield. And she had a stallion who was a rescue horse, just not in very good health, really scrawny. But my mare and her stallion spent a year together in the pasture, and they were both supposed to be infertile. And my mare at this point was 24 years old and had never had a foal.
Wow.
So she got pregnant, and I was afraid she would die having her, you know, being that old, but she was fine.
That's an amazing story.
I gave it my horse then to this friend whose horse was the dad.
Uh-huh.
So she was special to both of us.
Kind of like full circle. Yeah, and we...
Well, you're not off the grid anymore, but how do you get to town without your horse?
The horse has third row seating and air conditioning now.
How old were you when you got a driver's license?
I was 19.
19, okay.
Yep.
So you didn't have to wait to marry Jesse to get a driver's license.
As soon as I turned 18, I was
gone. What were you working at when you met Jesse?
She was a milk woman.
Brad and Jane Whitaker's.
Okay.
I was working on their farm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they are delivered raw milk and heavily to Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Grass-fed meat.
Right.
Yeah.
So you were helping milk and bottle and raise chickens and pluck feathers off them and all that good stuff with Brad and his wife.
We didn't do a whole lot of chicken butchering.
Okay.
But I think they had by that time delegated that to the Amish.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to mess
with
it.
Yeah.
But yeah, all the other stuff.
Her and one of her brothers were there helping.
Doing.
Brad. Yeah. And when we met, I would drive to Brookfield to see her. We'd go with Brad together to help him deliver milk in the cold winter months. And that was always fun to do, to see his customer base and the relationships he had with them. Brad, we still go visit them quite a bit. Brad and I, anytime I have a question on something with raising pigs or something, I call Brad. We just took in 4 pigs. We sold 3, and we bought 12 this year by mistake, and we kept 4 and raised them all, and kept one for ourselves and sold the other 3. Older gentleman out of Jeff City had a bunch for sale, and I told him I wanted 2, and he sounded like a real neat old guy. He enjoyed this conversation, and I went down there, and I took our livestock trailer, and he had 12 in a big metal crate. They were all probably about 80 pounds, and he had them. He could move them around with the front end loader on his tractor with the forks. And he could just move the big metal crate right up to the back of my trailer, and I could yank him in there. And I got to talking with him, and it was real good conversation. We finally got around getting the pigs, and I was like, "So you want me to just get 2 out of there?" And he said, "Oh, I thought you said you wanted 12. And he had gone through all this trouble to get them for us. And we were all there. And I was like, well, he went through all this trouble to load them up. And I was like, well, I only brought enough cash to get 2, so you're going to have to trust me and take a check. And he goes, "Oh, I trust you. That's fine." So we took all 12, and like 6 of them got out the first day and out of our electric fence. So we got that all under control, and we sold off 8 of them at a sale barn. After the fact, I realized I probably could have kept another 3 or 4 and sold them. But that was interesting. He called me the other day just to see how he did on her pigs. I need to call him back.
Right. And if you'd kept them, now you'd have 100 head.
I know. Yeah, there you go. Yeah, we've had dairy goats. We're still going to do pigs, and I'm in the process of cleaning up the mess from the loggers where I've been cutting firewood like crazy.
Right.
And we're going to try to get that fenced in by the summer sometime and get a couple of beef's out there, trying to build the soil up.
Right.
And the end goal would be that if we could do a dairy cow and maybe two beefs a year on what'll end up when we're all said and done being maybe 8 or so acres of pasture. Mm-hmm. We'll see how it goes, you know.
Right.
So that's a lot of beef.
Because you're on
one beef, I guess, yeah.
You're on 19 acres here, right?
17 altogether.
Okay.
And we probably have 8 to 9 that we could squeeze some pasture out of, maybe. Okay. Just, you know, we'll just kind of depends.
Mm-hmm.
Soil is kind of rough right here. This place was pretty just kind of forgotten about whenever we got it.
Now, you had amazing rains up here this year.
No.
In August, we had
a ton of rain in August, but we had nothing before August and pretty much nothing after. But we did have, in August, we had some floods, you know, a little bit. And It was like I couldn't get to town this way because the creek was up too high.
Yeah.
That was the first time that had happened since we've been here. But I wish we'd have gotten more rain.
So, y'all seem very happy in this rehabbed trailer.
Oh, yeah. We are. Yeah. Yeah, very happy in it.
But when you talk about your dream house, what's it going to be? Is this it?
No, it's not it. It's there's a floor plan already made up
for it.
And I estimated and did all the project management for all of our construction projects over the past couple of years. And so that helped me get...
I bet.
Just a lot better. I developed a lot of skills. And that's when you just get to doing, like you said, you wake up the next day and you have more skills and, you know, you're more useful. But so that's been really helpful with trying to put together the estimate for that. But it's a 4-bedroom, right, with 2 bathrooms. And I had to adjust the plan for it a little bit because we wanted to make sure we got a front porch and make sure we got a mud room.
Yeah,
need a mud
sure.
Room.
Need a mud room. Mm-hmm. And some friends of ours that we both knew independently before we got married, I remembered one day that I really liked their house, so I kind of just took their floor plan from what I could remember and tweaked it to suit us a little better. And I think we want to put it out where the garden is. We're going to shrink our garden this year, but not to necessarily grow less food, just we realized we could grow just as much in less space if we manage it better. So we're going to put it up there so it'll be kind of between the garden and the pond. And
The new garden will be between the garden and the pond, or
the new house. The new house will be between
on a pad. Or what are you going to do?
I think we want to do a partial crawl space, and then just under the kitchen, have a small basement. Just
there you go.
Basically like what a larder would have been
in case a tornado might come.
Tornado along. And storing food. You know,
right?
We have we put a storm shelter in when we moved here, just outside the end of the house here.
Mm-hmm.
And that works great for that stuff, but you know, when we go to
what will
the
foundation cost? Have you come up with
an idea?
I have
no idea. What did your foundation cost?
Well, you don't want to know what ours cost.
I do want to know, because you know what it's like to go. Was your house you guys lived in before the storm hit? Did you guys build that, or anybody in your family?
No, that was built in 1942 after a big fire.
That house. Oh, so that was
the old house.
That wasn't even the original house.
About the big house. And I say 42 because when I was doing some remodeling in there, I was taking down some plasterboard and plaster and lath.
Yeah.
And in on the 2x4 in pencil was written John Preston Carpenter, 1942.
Oh, wow.
And that house, I don't know if they built this on top of the old one, but it's got a brick foundation.
Okay.
A brick floor in the basement.
Oh, wow.
With 1 inch of plaster on the top.
Oh, wow. Okay. And so the original, like, homestead house had burned down in that location. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And so, and now our new house was built in 2006.
Yeah.
I consulted a neighbor of yours, I don't remember his name, who was doing foundations.
Oh, said, Bohm. There's a guy named Bohm.
That's it.
He lives right up down the road here,
And he said, you're going to have a very heavy house, which we knew.
Yeah, with the timber frame.
So we put a 10-inch foundation walkout basement and tons of rebar.
Yeah.
And 6 foot of gravel all around it with drain pipe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the walkout basement, 20,000. which I hate to think what it would cost now.
Yeah, nowadays, I mean,
because I don't think cement's gone down in value.
No, and you could do block. I don't know what's better to do. The foundation's the number one part of the whole house that of building in general, where I'm fine with just saying, I don't know, I'm just going to call somebody who does.
Yeah.
On the rest of it, I would do myself, or maybe hire out a crew to get it dried in. I go back and forth on if I'd want to do the framing and the roofing myself, because I could do it, but it'd take me 3 months. And so it depends on what the situation's like. We may just hire somebody who can...
Framers can just slap it together so fast.
They can just knock it out fast. Yep. I can, you know, monitor the quality, and then I can finish the inside at my own pace and save plenty on that. We're trying to be frugal, as always.
You know, you've learned a few things over the years.
Just a few.
It's kind of fun listening to you.
When you built your house, or when the tornado happened, what made you guys want to do a timber frame house?
I took my wife around. She was in trauma over what are we going to do about a house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had 400 milk customers who would let us look at their houses.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked out about a dozen and took her on a tour.
Mm.
And the house we built is a house that is south of Harrisburg. The guy owns a funeral home in Columbia.
Okay.
And Kathleen said, I want this house.
Did you build like the same house, basically?
We went over there with a tape measure and pencil and paper, and we copied his house.
Really?
And, you know, we didn't know anything about timber framing, but all he had to do was look and see. Oh, those are dovetailed tenons.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, we can do that.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how we came up with our house.
So was it, and all that lumber, was it milled off of your land?
Yeah, we went and spent 6 weeks cutting down about 110 oak trees.
Oh my goodness.
And milling them into
dimensional
to beams.
Yeah.
And then we spent another 6 weeks putting the tenons and mortises and the bends together.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3 days with a crane lifting and putting it all together. And then I spent another year doing everything else.
Yeah.
Wiring, plumbing.
Did you do most of it yourself? Did you have anybody who had timber frame helping you out? Or
I had my son Patrick help quite a little.
Yeah.
Especially with the building and putting the joints together.
Yeah.
But then everything else I did myself.
Yeah.
With a little bit of help.
Yeah.
And worked long days.
Oh yeah.
I did not know what I was doing. And if you look around the house, you'll see that. You know, like I had a friend who I knew was a drug addict.
Yeah.
But he was a good drywaller, and I said, "Well, I tell you what, Kathleen, let's have him do the basement, and then based on that, we'll decide if we're going to turn him loose on the rest of the house."
Yeah.
With I say doing the drywall. We made structurally insulated panels ourselves,
okay,
which is OSB on the outside, 3.5 inch of rigid foam insulation, and then drywall inside.
The
drywall was there, but the mudding I needed help with.
Yeah, yeah.
So he did a wonderful job. Kathleen said, do it.
Yeah.
And then he went on a terror.
Oh.
And I ended up doing my own mudding.
Oh, my.
It was awful.
People don't, I can mud, but people who can mud, but they could do something else for money, and people ask them, I don't know what you're talking about, I can't mud. Somebody asked me, somebody I knew from when I went to Bible college here, when we moved back, they messaged me and said, I heard you were, are you still half decent at mudding? I feel like I remember that being the thing. I don't know what you're talking about, but here's a number for somebody who can do it.
Now, my son John did his own mudding.
Yeah.
He did an excellent job.
Yeah.
So it can be done by novices.
It can be done. It can be done. Lots of patience.
But this man here is a chainsaw carpenter.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And actually, my grandson said to me a year ago, you know, I'd like to live in this old house that the tornado
was
destroyed.
I remember you saying that, yeah.
And we are having more fun. And
are you guys getting it together?
Getting
it together?
Almost no money.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, things like all the ceilings really need to be drywalled. But I thought, you know, I've got this stuff laying around. this white plastic, and I've got row cover, and if the Japanese can have paper walls in their house, I'm going to put this on the ceilings. It looks pretty good.
Yeah.
And you know, and then if when he's 25, he wants to put drywall up,
he can put it up.
Go for it.
Yeah.
So we're saving a lot of money and time by doing unconventional things down there.
Yeah. I remember last time I saw it, you had some, well, for a minute you had some mobile home trusses leaning off the side of it for a greenhouse years ago. And then you had a really big greenhouse with all, like the ponds that have the floating trays. I used to, I still had some of those floating trays.
Right.
Do you still have that down there?
The wind would not allow me to keep the plastic on the big greenhouse.
Okay.
And I didn't know really what I was doing with that. It worked for a couple seasons. And we have put a small greenhouse on the side of the house with trailer trusses, and it's full of lettuce and kale and spinach. And, and this time I didn't put it over the big front window on the living room, so it's half the size and a lot better.
Okay, that's off your main house.
The boys said, you know, we had to redo the stairs to the basement and to the upstairs, and the boys said, how about if we put a hole in the floor and have a fireman's pole going down? You bet. Let's do it.
Oh man, is it in there? Does it
do
man,
it's fun. So we're doing a lot of unconventional things.
Yeah.
And then we've got the Patriots bedroom.
Oh, yeah?
Which has a big American flag on one whole wall. That way I don't have to paint it.
Yeah.
Paint is expensive. Yeah. And then they said, you got two flags, Grandpa. Let's put the other one on the bed. Well, okay. When I was in college, kids were putting flags on their on their butts, on their jeans. So nobody got thrown in jail for that. So we have a Patriots bedroom. We're having a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We are. And that's what you should do in life.
Absolutely, yeah.
And when they want to change things, they've done it once, they can do it up better next time.
Yeah, it's encouraging to hear all the things you've done. Not knowing what you're doing, you just get started, because I didn't grow up doing any of the things that I spend most of my time doing now. I just started doing it, or got around somebody who knew a little bit about it, or I mean, in this day and age, there's YouTube, which is very helpful to me. I've used YouTube a ton to learn all kinds of stuff.
I listened to a really professional carpenter. He had a blog or something. No, he's on National Public Radio. And he said, you know, everybody says I know so much, and I do, but let me tell you, everything I learned was by doing things wrong.
Yeah, 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 no kidding.
That really encouraged me.
Yeah, yeah, no kidding.
Well, Jesse, thanks for taking this time.
Yeah.
And you better eat some more before you go to bed.
Yeah.
And this has been really fun. I'm going to wrap on this. Rachel, I loved your story on the horse, too.
Yeah.
You got any more really winning stories I should hear? Well, another time I'll come up and we'll sit down, the two of us.
Yeah, that'd be good.